Wealth and Happiness, a fast-paced, informative, hour-long program dealing with physical, emotional, and mental health issues, financial money management, as well as the arts, theater, travel, and entertainment. Brought to you by the University of South Carolina School of Medicine Specialty Clinics, SCANA, the parent company of SCENG, the Coker Center for the Arts, the Newberry Opera House, the South Carolina Philharmonic, A.J. Lanigan, and the Beta Products, Leon Jones Insurance, Midland Hearing Associates, Congaree Pharmacy, and Buster Phillips, senior friends of Providence Hospital. And now, here's the host of Health, Wealth, and Happiness, Gary Posick.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Health, Wealth, and Happiness. Here's a rundown of today's program. My first guest is an author. He is an entrepreneur. He's a man who has written a book that will help anybody navigate through life. I think so many of us just kind of sleepwalk through life, or at best, we just kind of put things in autopilot and hope for the best. Well, according to my first guest, Dr. Nate Williams, he says he got a plan for the future. You gotta make a plan, make your plan work. And by following his advice, you can, in three simple steps, overcome any obstacle facing you in life. And I thought as we started the new year, it would be good to have somebody on, because, you know, so oftentimes we talk about we're going to change. We're going to have New Year's resolutions. And as if we've been smoking, we're going to stop. And if we need to work harder, get more organized, we're going to do that. Well, you need a plan to do that. And that will be along during the first half hour to tell us how to do that. From 1:30 to 1:45, Jack Thompson stops by with his daily commentary on the stock market, investments, and business news. And my final guest of the day will be from the University of South Carolina McKissick Museum. Her name is Jill Coverman. She is the curator of collections at McKissick Museum, and she's going to be talking about an exhibit they call Natural Curiosity. And I'll let Jill explain that when she comes on the show from 1:45 to 2. Welcome, making his first appearance on Health, Wealth, and Happiness, Dr. Nat Williams. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Gary. Thanks so much.
I would hope that you would agree that most people, or I would think the majority of people, kind of sleepwalk through life. They kind of put their life in autopilot, and they deal with the here and now, and they really don't think much about what tomorrow may bring. I'm so busy putting out fires, I don't have time to think about where I'm going next. But I'm going to work hard, and I'm going to hope for the best.
I would agree, Gary. I think that people need to plan their work, but I think also be prepared to work their plan. And it really requires both of those intentions coming together in order for us to reach the things that are important to us.
And I think so. Oftentimes, those people who are successful have learned exactly what you're talking about, and that is how to overcome any obstacle that may be facing them. And one of the things that you have to do is you got a plan. By that I mean, if you're going from Columbia, South Carolina to Cleveland, Ohio without a roadmap, you don't know where you are, where you're going, or how are you going to get there. You're just going to hope for the best. Well, you know, I know it's north of, so I'll just get on, Highway I-77 out of Columbia and hope for the best, because I think eventually it'll probably get to Cleveland. Well, maybe it will, and maybe it won't.
Well, Gary, I think you bring up a good point. I've heard one said before that either you develop a plan or you'll be working for someone, always working for someone that has one. So if, as you use the analogy of the highway, whoever developed those highways had a plan for how they would be connected. And if you don't have a plan on your destination, you're just going to go wherever that highway planner decided for those highways to go. And I'm sure that that's not, especially with the price of gas, even though it's come down, we don't want to follow that kind of path. So I would definitely concur with you that a plan is very, very important.
Now, you're not some guy, just because you have a doctor in front of your name, that lives in an ivory tower and thinks deep thoughts and puts them on paper. You're a guy who's worked in the public sector and nonprofit, in the public sector and profit, a guy who has certainly a lot of degrees, which means you're a learned man. But maybe the most important thing, Nat, that you have learned is how to overcome any obstacle that may face you, and by that, not knowing you at all, but reading what information I have about you, I think almost anybody who succeeds in life has to be a risk taker. And obviously, you're one of those people.
For sure. And I think what's important about being a risk taker is that you really calculate and you have a lens in which to look at the risk. And you want to look at all risk through the same lens. And hopefully, by looking at it in a calculated kind of way, you can decide whether this makes sense for me or not. And I think that's where people make a mistake, is they really don't have, as I said, a lens in which to look at the obstacle that's in front of them, the challenge, the job offer, the love interest. They don't have a lens in which to look at that person through consistently, and I think that's where a lot of the mistakes come in and the regrets come in.
Finding three separate simple steps that can help you beat any obstacle sounds almost too simplistic, too hard to believe. Yeah, I guess because it's, you know, the old saying, Nat, if it's too hard to believe, it probably is not true. But in your case, it is. So let's kind of get started with, all right, regardless of obstacle, what can I do in three simple steps to overcome that obstacle?
Well, I think we need to remember that there are some absolutes that will exist in life. And as we begin any planning, we need to make sure that we begin with these absolutes on our radar screen. And the first absolute is that everything will change in transition. Nothing will stay the same. And I think a lot of times when we begin different aspects of our life, we just assume that everything will stay the same. But I think an effective way of planning is to always remember that. So when I was just reviewing my 401k plan that came into today's mail that said I lost 10%. But there are other times in which I've made 20%, made 25%, made 30%. I have to know that when I go into this 401k plan, there will be things that will change and transition as time goes on. It's always not going to be that I'm getting a 25% return on my investment. The second thing is that there needs to be an understanding that an absolute of life is that there's going to be accountability and reckoning. So when we drink that soda, when we have that Danish, when we have that argument with another person, there's going to be accountability and reckoning for that. And I think a lot of times we forget that in our planning, is that whatever we do, we'll have to be held accountable and have to reckon with that. Sometimes the reckoning may come several years later, but we need to recognize that accountability and reckoning will be there. And the last absolute is that everything comes to an end and everything terminates, and that most of the time when we begin something, we need to keep that in mind, that it's automatically working toward its end. So the minute I said I do to my wife, my marriage is now working toward its end, and I need to be mindful of that, not fearful of it, but mindful of it. So I think it's those absolutes as the first step, is just to remember that things will change and transition, there will be accountability and reckoning, and everything is working toward its end and its termination. And again, I think if we begin our planning with those things, that will contaminate us to make some other decisions that we normally would stay away from. So we buy a new car, we need to understand that those absolutes of life will be in place as well. Things will change and transition with that new car immediately. There will be accountability and reckoning if we don't maintain it the way it's supposed to be maintained. And the minute we drove it off the showroom, it's now working toward the time when it'll end up in a junkyard.
I think you're absolutely right. And, of course, we have, over the years, developed a lot of platitudes along those lines. You know, all good things must come to an end.
Sure.
That kind of covers that.
Sure.
But not all the platitudes are absolutely true. An example would be, if you don't succeed the first time, try again. Well, if you try using the same techniques,
sure,
and the same principles that you've already failed once with, I heard what you said about things change and you know, nothing is static. But the fact of the matter is, wouldn't it be far better to use the adage, if you don't succeed the first time, adjust what you're doing and try again?
And I would just add to that, Gary, that I think it's important that you look at how you came to that conclusion. I read a phrase once that said, you know, the outcome that you receive was exquisitely designed to achieve such. So we have to understand that sometimes when we are successful or when we are a failure at trying to achieve something, we exquisitely designed that outcome, and we need to be able to bathe ourselves in that reality, because that's where our liberation is going to come from. So I think that we just need to be mindful that if something we attempted to do didn't work, again, trying the same technology. There's a sign here on the side of the road that has, I think it's George Washington, or maybe it's Abraham Lincoln, and using that same phrase, you know, tried once, tried twice, tried three times, and look what eventually happened. And I think that that turns into an advertisement on the side of the road, because that's the rare occasion that it happens. A lot of times that we just keep trying the same technology over and over again. It's like, you know, your car won't start and you just keep trying to turn it and turn it and turn it. Usually the 25th time of trying to start your car, it doesn't mean that your car is going to start. So you maybe have to do something different in order to get the car started. But trying the same thing over and over again, I would agree, Gary, you're going to have to do some adjustments and try some things differently.
Something else you said, and I don't want to pass over it and transition, that sure. would be that You need to be held accountable for your actions. And,
sure.
and that may be a bitter pill to swallow or a hard thing to sell at the present time, when seemingly, whether you're an individual who bit off more than you could chew in buying a home, or if you're a major corporation that made some bad investments or whatever, it looks like Uncle Sam is going to be there to bail you out. So, well, those people weren't accountable. Nat, why should I be accountable?
Well, I think, Gary, reality is that it may look like a bailout, but I think we all know no government intervention comes without a price tag.
You mean so, there is no free lunch?
There is no free lunch. So reality is, when you have those regulators involved in your day-to-day operations because you have taken that money, again, the reckoning just never stops. It may appear to us, because we're not a lot of times in that building, in that office, in that home, that the reckoning is not going on, but it does go on. A lot of times it goes on in ways we just can't see.
And I think that really holds true with what I stated earlier, that you obviously are a risk taker.
Sure.
Another way of stating that is, no risk, no reward. I think those people who really do get ahead are people who not only succeed, but also people who along the way fail. And I bet that although it's never difficult to get any speaker up before any group to say, I am a self-made man, I made this happen, rarely are you going to get anyone who's going to step forward and say, I am a self-made failure. See, it's always somebody else's fault, the cards were against me, somebody didn't like me, or there's always an excuse. But the fact of the matter is, many of us are self-made failures.
Sure. And Gary, one of the terms that I use a lot in talking with other people is the term bathe. And I don't mean that in the sense of cleanliness. I mean the sense of using an analogy of bathing yourself in the sunlight. Is really, I think we have to take our circumstances and really allow for ourselves to not hide behind that. And I was just talking to a friend yesterday, and I was placed in foster care when I was age 5. And on my birth certificate, my father's name is not listed because my mother did not know exactly who my father was. So from the age of 5, I had no parent, and for the first 5 years only had my mother. And I come from a family of 11 other siblings. And what was interesting is, a couple of years ago, I had my oldest son, who was about 18 at that particular point, get up in front of the group. My agency runs group homes for children, and say to them, you know, for a period of time, I was really very angry that my father was not at home and was at work all the time, but being here with you guys this evening gives me a deeper appreciation for the work that my father does. And he said, you know, if I can turn out to be 10% of what my father is, I would consider myself to be a success. Now, I share that because here is a person who, on his birth certificate, no father is listed, and has gone through his life without a father, who then has his son say that he would like to just be 10% of who he is as a father. So I think that if we bathe ourselves in our circumstance and recognize that we too can overcome this challenge, and the way I overcame that challenge, Gary, is by working with children like I was a child, a foster child. That was my first job, was going back and saying, you know, there's no better place to learn how to be a father than to take on the role of being a surrogate father for kids who don't have any. So when I started having my family 7 years later, I had some years underneath my belt of being a surrogate parent. But I think that's how we have to bathe ourselves in our circumstance. I think we can feel sorry that it happened, but I don't think we need to pity our circumstance. We have to figure out a methodology in which to rise above that.
And you obviously are a man for what you practice what you preach, in as much as you are the father of six children. But the beat rolls on with you. You're soon to be the proud father of a seventh child to be born in about 3 months. So,
Correct. So
obviously you've overcome a lot of obstacles, but the fact of the matter is, I'm sure it has not been one sunshiny day after another.
No.
Was success, and
no, it hasn't.
Success. Somewhere along the line, I bet you've had some failure in your life.
Sure, and in lots of different ways. And as you were talking about the children, my wife and I were blessed a couple of years ago, two and a half years ago, to have a set of twins that were born, one boy, one girl. And that was just a wonderful occasion. But about 3 months ago, we found out that the boy has autism. We'll have some challenges and does have some challenges because of that. So again, we are blessed in lots of ways, but challenged in others. But the way in which to work, the best with, my son Taj is to make sure that he gets the supports and services that he needs. And the difference has been night and day. But again, it is because we have a plan as a family in which to address this challenge that we have. So you're right. It isn't all easy. But even when you have those challenges, I think, by remembering some of the points that I'm trying to highlight, I think that'll allow for you to overcome them and move on. And it is difficult. It is a challenge. But again, it is truly a blessing as well. But you have to arrange your life so that you can see those challenges and not confuse those challenges terrible circumstances, but just blessings that are a little bit harder to work through.
Well, it kind of goes back even to what we stated from the beginning when I said you were going to share with us three simple steps that can help overcome any obstacle. Well, you can see a challenge, I guess, in two lights. You can see it as an obstacle, or you can see it as an opportunity.
Very much so.
And obviously you've chose the latter, an opportunity.
Sure.
I think what's interesting here is that it's a philosophy, yes, but it's a philosophy that you have to live and act out every day, whether you have support from anyone or support from no one. It's what you feel in your heart and what you feel responsible for doing for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because quite frankly, if you don't advocate for yourself, I don't know who's going to. And that's what you've just stated in finding out that your son is autistic. You're advocating for him. You're going to find solutions to his problems that he right now can't solve.
For sure.
All of that said, tell us about how the book that you have written will help anyone, because it is pretty much universal.
Very much so, Gary. And again, some of the things, and you said it earlier, they're concepts that we may have heard in different parts before. And what I tried to do was to add some new things to it, but also try to bring those things together. So an example is, we just went over the first part, and the first step is to remember the absolutes of life. The second part talks about just remembering, listening to how the world talks to us. And the world doesn't talk to us from the standpoint of empowerment. It talks to us from the standpoint of shame. And it tries to get us to do our biggest things in life through trying to shame ourselves into coming to that point. So lots of times we will buy our first house or buy our car, not because we're empowered to do that. It's because someone else has that car. The advertising said that if we wanted to be legitimate in one way or another, that we were going to do that by purchasing this vehicle or going to this vacation spot. And so a lot of the language that we're hearing is attempting to shame us, and we just need to be aware of that. We do that with each other lots of times, and lots of times we find it with people that we love. We'll sit there and say, well, Billy, you're not as good as your brother Tom. And again, that's attempting to shame them, not empower them into, or this worker is not as good as the other worker. We have to just recognize, as the second part, is just to be aware of the shameful language that we're using versus the empowering language. And what goes along with that is a lot of us are living our dreams, but we think we're living our dreams and working toward our dreams, but we're actually dealing with our fears, and we're leading our life by our fears rather than our dreams. And what shame does, it really deals with our fears. What empowerment does, it really deals with our dreams. And so we need to be mindful of shame and its correlation to fear, and empowerment and its correlation to dreams, and being aware of how we're leading our life. Are we camouflaging one? You know, someone said to me, my dream is to not be a failure. Well, that's not your dream. That's your fear. And reality is you need to do some more soul searching to figure out what is your dream. So that, I think that's the second part. It's just to be mindful. Am I living my dreams, my fears? Am I listening to the shame that's being placed upon me, or am I attempting to empower myself? Then the next step is, and the last part of trying to come up with good plans, is basically remembering that every decision has 8 different dynamics to it. So if I've been offered a job to come to South Carolina and to let's say teach, I need to look at that through 8 different areas of my life. I need to look at it from the standpoint of education. What do I know about South Carolina? What do I know about the company or the school or the organization? Second area is spirituality. How is my spirituality going to be affected? What does my spirituality say about making these kinds of moves? The personal development, the person that I am, the person I want to be. How does moving to South Carolina help me achieve that? My health and my fitness, how does this move help that? My family and friends, the people I belong to, how will this move help that? The environment, where am I going? How is that going to be conducive to the kind of life that I want to provide for myself and others? Financially, is this going to help me, hurt me? Sometimes we make moves that end up costing us more when we thought we was going to save. And last but not least, recreation. A lot of times we forget that in all the things we need to do, we need to have a little fun. And sometimes the things that we decide to do, they limit that. So that's the last area, is just basically saying to consider the full person when making a decision. Because what happens, I see often, is people come back and say, oh, I made that move to South Carolina, but my mother had Alzheimer's, and I wasn't able to be there for her, and she passed away, and now they're burdened with this. But again, this model is saying, consider your family and friends in that decision, and make sure when you make it that you're comfortable with that as best you can under the circumstance. But a lot of times those things are not paid attention to, and they come back later and they creep in and they cause some challenges. And one of the things I believe very firmly in is to try to lead life with the least amount of regrets as you possibly can. And this tool being asking you to look at 8 different domains or aspects of your life when making a decision. And that could be whether it's to take a job, whether it's to be in a relationship with a person, whether it's to go on vacation. It's basically saying look at the total picture when you're making this and look at it from all those different vantage points.
And unfortunately, I want people to understand the message you just gave. It's not that, as you weigh these 8 different considerations, that they all end up being positive. In other words, you don't have to have 8 for 8 to be able to make a decision. Because quite frankly, and not everything's going to have a positive. There are going to be some negatives. I think what you got to look at is, overall, are there more positives than negatives, and does that make sense?
Right.
One of the things, however, that I think limits so many of us have nothing to do with shame from somebody else or somebody holding us back. If you want to know who's holding you back, most of the time, it's real easy. Look in the mirror, and we'll discuss that right after these messages.
USC School of Medicine Specialty Clinics have 220 physicians and 9 clinics to serve your medical needs. Over 65,000 patients were seen last year by our staff, made up of the men and women who are on the faculty of USC School of Medicine. If you're new to Columbia and looking for health care, or if you're wanting a second opinion, give us a call at 255-3400 At USC's School of Medicine, we practice what we teach.
Would you like to own a brand new computer and improve your credit at the same time? If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99, you're already approved for a brand new Dell, HP, or other brand name computer. There's no credit check, so you won't be turned down. Computer Funding says you're approved, guaranteed, even if you have bad or no credit. All you need is a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for only 12 months. We even report on your credit, so you can help start to build or rebuild a positive rating today. Call 1-800-971-1859. Call right now and we'll include a free 20-inch LCD TV and over $300 of additional gifts and upgrades with your paid purchase. Don't wait. Call now for your computer or wireless laptop and help build or rebuild your credit today. Call 1-800-971-1859. 1-800-971-1859. That's 1-800-971-1859.
The Mitchell House and Gardens is offering a holiday special. Between now and February 14th, you'll receive the lowest prices of the year for weddings and wedding receptions. With over 20 menus to choose from, we can cater your wedding to serve any budget. During this Valentine's Day special, all brides will receive a free bottle of champagne and a red roses bridal bouquet. We can serve parties from just your family to over 300. So if you're getting married and you haven't toured the Mitchell House, you owe it to yourself to do so. Give us a call for a free tour and consultation. Our number is 359-5325. The Mitchell House and Gardens, 421 North Lake Drive in Lexington. Call us now, 359-5325.
For over 30 years, Leon Jones has served thousands of satisfied customers in the Midlands. We represent over 15 different insurance companies and would like to give you a quote on how much we can save you on your car insurance. Call our toll-free number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to see how much money we can save you. Just dial 1-800-280-2378. Once again, that toll-free number, no obligation, is 1-800-280-2378. One call shops them all. Or visit us at any office, and we're located in Columbia, Batesburg, Leesville, Orangeburg, Camden, Sumter, Newberry, and Florence. Yes, Leon Jones Insurance. We're driven to be the best.
We are back, and joining us via the phone is Dr. Nat Williams. Dr. Williams has written a book called The Navigator of Life. And we're talking about ways of succeeding and overcoming obstacles in your life, because we all know it ain't one rosy day after another. And just before the break, Nat, I indicated that, you know, if you wanted to see what might be holding your back, you may want to look in the mirror, because for many of us, we are our own worst enemy. We are our own biggest critic. And if you go through life saying, you can't do that, chances are you won't do that.
Sure. And, Gary, I think that that statement is so very profound. One of the things that I say very often to people, the only person standing in your way is you. And that is because we have to learn different ways of managing people and places and things. And if we learn to manage those things, they begin to get out of our way and become less of a challenge. But a lot of times we don't recognize it's our technology, and I don't mean the computer technology or scientific technology, but it's just our skills, the tools that we bring to the circumstance, that we have to hone those skills, we have to hone those tools, we have to improve upon them, because there are other people out there in our same circumstance who have been able to turn this challenge, this circumstance, this burden into something that has worked for them and has not hurt them. A lot of times, because we want to be so private about these challenges and burdens that we have, we shut down our communication at a time when we really should be opening up our communication. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that the only person standing in my way is me, and I have to figure out a way to get me out of my way.
100 years ago, or nearly so, Henry Ford said, give me 8 hours and I will train a man for his life's work. Mm-hmm. And what you've just said is so very, very true. Today, it is estimated that most of this generation coming up will have between 25 and 30, listen to me, 25 or 30 jobs in their career. Coupled with that becomes new job skills and new knowledges that we're going to have to learn. In other words, education is not going to be restricted to K through 12 or an undergraduate degree or a graduate degree or a doctorate degree. Education will be lifelong, and the learner will be in and out of educational experiences all their life.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I got my doctorate last year, and I just finished up my master's in business administration this year, and people keep asking me all the time, when are you going to stop? And I don't see any reason to, because one of the things that I note in the book is to be aware, which is to learn as much as you can about the much you do not know. And so if you believe in that concept, then you just understand that you'll continue on that lifelong pursuit of knowledge. And I think you put it extremely well, Gary, by saying that'll be inside, you know, bricks and mortar places and outside of bricks and mortar places, in places that end in the name with the word college or university, and other places that may be in churches and synagogues and mosques and other places as well. So it's important to understand that education can come from a whole litany of places. It's not the places that would normally associate with that, but to be open for that pursuit of more information and more knowledge.
And I will guarantee you, if I can get personal for a moment, you will be a much better parent to that unborn child that you're going to bring into this world than you were with your first. Why? Because life is such a learning experience.
For sure. And sometimes, in all honesty, I can see that in my 19-year-old son's eyes, that the things were a little different for the younger ones than they were for him. And having saw that one time, we had a conversation about that and tried to share just your point, is that I know so much more than I do before. And I'm also at a different position in my life from a work standpoint than I was when he was younger as well. But I think he appreciates the journey and the process that I've gone through. So I believe that he understands that he too will go through the same situation if he has children as well, is that there are things you will do with the first that you will not do with the second and continuing on. And that's the beauty of life, that if you're given another day, we should apply the knowledge that we've learned. And so often we don't do that. We live another day and we try to repeat the same stuff that got us into trouble the day before, and I don't think that's what our higher power would want for us to.
Well, unfortunately, you're right. I think for many people, they live life as a goose. You know, every day is a brand new experience, not remembering what the day before was like. But all that said, we're talking about a philosophy, and you've written a book to that philosophy, but it ain't so highfalutin that people can't read it and gain something for it. You know, if I tell everybody that you have 4 degrees, they're thinking, oh, my God, well, if this man has 4 degrees, I'm sure I couldn't understand his book. Want to bet?
Yeah, and what was interesting once, I had the book reviewed over the spring, and one of the reviewers had said, this is a PowerPoint presentation masquerading as a book. And I was offended by it for about 2 seconds, and then felt that must be wonderful, that if it's that simple that a person can understand, that's good. And Gary, this stuff is also available on the website at thenavigatorhoflife.com. It's free of charge. All the visuals are there. I want people to have this information, not because I want to be compensated for it. I do think it makes a difference in people's lives, and the stories that I've heard from people is just giving them, a different lens in which to look at life and to make decisions. So I would hope that people would take advantage of the information, but it's not for any other purpose than wanting the best for people, because I do see that a lot of people are struggling, and a lot of the information you've heard before, but I'm hoping to try to put it in one place where you can be able to reference it in a pretty easy format.
That said, for those people who are interested in buying a copy of your book, The Navigator of Life, how can they do so?
Sure, they can do that on the website, again, thenavigatorhoflife.com, or they can go on Amazon and order it from there or any other bookseller as well. It is not in stores. It's only available online through Amazon or through the Navigator of Life site. Hopefully, as things get go on, it'll be available in bookstores. But at this point, it's just available online.
Dr. Nat Williams, I thank you so very much for coming and sharing on Health, Wealth, and Happiness.
Thank you, Gary, so much. It's my pleasure.
Beta-1-3-D-glucan is a dietary supplement. When taken in proper dosage, enhances the immune system. For over 30 years, beta-glucan has been researched and found to be very effective as an antioxidant and a free radical scavenger, which helps your immune system be all that it can be in fighting both bacterial and fungal infections and diseases, ranging from the common cold to cancer. People who are in a chronic state of illness, who have diabetes, or who have been exposed to radiation or chemotherapy can benefit from taking beta-glucan without fear of any toxic or allergic reaction from this Baker's Yeast product. To order beta-glucan, simply call 361-4310. Well, that was kind of awkward, but I was waiting for Jack to call, and he called, and we had 1 second to go on that commercial. Jack's here every day, Monday through Friday, with his take on the stock market, investments, and business news during the wealth portion of the show. And here we are with the first full day after the holidays. And, God, I hope this isn't an omen. But, you know, Jack, it said that as the first five working days of the market go, so will go the year. And if you'll remember back a year ago, the first 5 days of trading on Wall Street were awful. And you know what? So was the year.
Well, you're not kidding, Gary. And let's say, let's look at it this way. It's the new year, obviously, like you said, the first real trading day today. And you can forget Auld Lang Syne. I mean, it's more like don't let the door hit you on the butt as you're leaving 2008. In other words, good riddance, Gary. May we never see the likes of 2008 again. So you put a happy face on it. You realize that the last weeks of 2008 were good enough essentially to bring the Dow Industrials to above 9,000, which they're a little below right now, but the NASDAQ over 1,600, the S&P got up to over 900 as we speak. Gasoline prices have been greatly reduced. New filings, Gary, for jobless benefits took a huge weekly decline last week. I mean, what's not to like on this mild, relatively sunny day in Columbia, South Carolina? Think about this, Gary. You got car dealers practically kissing your hind quarters to induce you to buy a car, or even two cars in some places for the price of one. You've got those greedy, supercilious credit card companies willing to cut deals when it comes to what you owe them. And the guys on Wall Street, Gary, are rubbing rabbit's feet together and looking endlessly for four-leaf clovers to cover, essentially to help them truly believe that we've set a bottom for this bear market. And by the way, we are now on a prolonged, if episodic, new upleg. That's what they think. Yeah. Here's the facts. So what exactly do we have staring us in the economic face as we greet this new year? Plunging global manufacturing, an auto industry on the verge of collapse, a drying up of spending, be it commercial or consumer, advance warnings of further steep cuts coming from corporate human resource departments around the country. I mean, even Paul Krugman in the Times today says essentially that this looks a lot like the beginning of a second Great Depression. His words, not mine. He points, as some others do, to a large-scale deficit spending plan that may be all that stands between where we are now and the coming of the second Great Depression. It's a Keynesian argument that he's making that counters claims that preventing the 1930s economic meltdown was as easy as providing banks with more liquidity, in essence, to stave off a sharp fall in the money supply, which, by the way, as they've done so far, Gary, they've thrown all the kinds of money at it in terms of liquidity. They've lowered the rates, as we've talked about, ad infinitum here, or ad nauseum, even better, to a point they can't really actually lower them anymore, which, by the way, so far hasn't solved today's crisis in lending. Credit is scarce right now, Gary, no matter how easy the Fed has made it to borrow. So John Maynard Keynes argued decades ago that monetary policy alone was ineffective under depression conditions, unless accompanied by large-scale deficit spending needed to fight mass unemployment. And it's a Keynesian thinking that Krugman notes is behind Obama's stimulus plan, Gary, to rescue this economy. So the Milton Friedmans of the world, who have been for years saying that all we needed to do was lower interest rates, keep that liquidity going, and we wouldn't have the problems that we had in the 1930s. At this point, it looks a little bit more like John Maynard Keynes might have had it right all the time.
One of the things that I think a lot of people are hanging their hopes and dreams are on is what the Obama administration is promising. They're promising a lot of money in what is now termed shovel-ready projects that will employ 3 million people on paper. That sounds really good. But do you think all those people on Wall Street that are out of work because they're the financial institution they work for are going to pick up an axe and a shovel and a pick and go build a bridge someplace? Yeah, back during the workman's days of the last Great Depression, most people were unskilled in labor. But right now, 3 million jobs don't match up with the people who are unemployed from the financial or service industry.
But here's the thing. If you don't go big, you don't go at all. And you have to go big, and you have to get it into the middle, to the lower socioeconomic rungs, obviously, because they have been left behind during this past 10, 15 years of profligate spending and incredible outsized profits during some periods of time. The bottom line, Gary, is this. If you do it right, you know, if you do it right, you're going to create hope. And that's what the country obviously needed during the Depression. That's what it needs now. Big government, believe it or not, even though these Republicans who have led to much of this big government and profligate spending we've seen over the last 7 or 8 years in particular, obviously are going to argue against a New Deal. They're going to argue against big government. They're going to argue in favor of they being the custodians of doing the right thing fiscally, which, unfortunately, they haven't been doing when they had all the opportunity to do so. But when you look at the crash of 1929, and you knew that in 1929 that the Dow Jones Industrials were at 381, and over the next 3 years, by 1932, they had fallen all the way down to only 41, from 381 down to 41. But then you recognize that when the industrials started to rally from 41, a low of 41 in 1932, 5 years later, the industrials went as high as 194. Now, you might say, big deal. I would say 500% over about a five-year period coming during the Great Depression is a big deal. And here's the way you look at it. You look at it from the standpoint that you need to give people hope. And also, you can look, if you're an investor, you could look at dollar cost averaging right now. In other words, looking out on your own personal horizon, whether it be 12 months, 24 months, take what monies you've got, divide it into increments, equal increments, and then invest it on the same day, every month, for instance, the same amount for the next 24 months, and I'm promising you at this point, you'll have a chance to not only, if the market has these, you know, furtive moves up and down, the fact is you'll be buying in at lower prices, and then if you happen to be buying at a right time, you'll get a little rise, a little move up. But a number of people are predicting that we have not yet reached the absolute bottom, or at least any particular bottom that will be the last one. They're looking at probably a series of bottoms before we can come out of this. And when you listen and you read the New York Times piece by Krugman today, he is essentially saying this is a very, very frightening time, the most frightening time. Well, we've heard this before from Greenspan and others, Gary, since the Great Depression. But he terms the second Great Depression as a possibility here. That's why he's in favor of this spending plan and not just lowering monetary rates and creating liquidity, which up till now, while it's certainly moving hopefully in the right direction, certainly hasn't solved all of the credit crisis problems.
No, and I just hope people don't get discouraged. You know, certainly the Democratic leadership in both the House and Senate has said they wanted to have on President Obama's desk on the 21st of January, when he moves into the Oval Office, a package already there for him to sign. Well, folks, that ain't going to happen.
Well, Republicans are not going to let that happen, first of all, because what they're going to say is they're going to want their 2 cents put in there, and they're going to want to make the argument that, in essence, why rush this thing? Why not have deliberations? Why not let it be across the aisle? And you know, there's a case to be made on either side. The fact is that it's not going to be cut and dried, and they're going to be ideological lines defined, so you can just bank it.
But we got to hope that that what we've seen during the last 8 years of the Bush administration doesn't carry over into the Obama administration. By that, I mean the politic. If a Democrat said it was white, a Republican said it was black, and vice versa. We've got to have better cooperation in that, because the nation, our economy, and the world economy, quite frankly, is at stake. And so somewhere along the line, you can be as philosophical as you want, but throwing money at it ain't going to hurt as long as it's legitimate. And by that, I mean it can't be each congressperson's favorite pet project.
A pig in a poke.
Which we used to call a pork, and now we call earmark, but a rose by any other name.
Exactly.
And, but we got to get rid of that. We've got to invest in those projects that have the biggest bang for our buck.
And Gary, we've talked on the show recently about the dead mall concept, the dead mall syndrome that we're going to be seeing all over the country. Today, the country's second largest mall owner, General Growth Properties, hired a commercial real estate firm to put prominent retail centers that they own, one in Boston, one in New York, and one in Baltimore, up for sale to get it out from under the huge amount of debt that they brought up when they were buying everything and building everything during the heyday of the housing industry and the real estate world. So bottom line is the dark or the dead mall concept is there. It's growing. Commercial real estate will be the next shoe to fall, and it's falling as we speak, but it's only going to accelerate in the near months. So all said, it's nice. It's one thing to say good riddance to 2008. But it's another thing, as some of the brokers today around the country are doing, Gary, looking through their own rose-colored glasses, they're pawing the ground and snorting like they really believe they're going to be bulls once again that are going to charge and bring this market ever higher. It's not that easy, Gary. It's just not.
Jack, thanks for coming and sharing on Health, Wealth, and Happiness. Fall is a great time for hitting the golf links. It's even more fun when you're playing well. That's where Brad Frick comes in. Brad's a golf professional. He serves as a coach and an instructor to several college golf team members. You may have read about Brad and Odette Clemente in the state newspaper. Brad is working with this USC co-ed in an attempt to take her from a beginning golfer to a scratch player in a year. Brad can help your golf game as well. He's available all day, every day, including weekends and most holidays. He's worked with golfers as young as 3 and as old as 92, and he's willing to work with you to make golf more fun and you a better player. You can reach Brad by calling him on a cell phone, 803-673-1851. That's 803-673-1851. His adult rates are very reasonable at $60 an hour or 4 lessons for $200, and $30 an hour or 4 lessons for $100 for juniors. Give Brad Frick a call today and start enjoying golf more by playing better. His lessons are plain and simple, easily understood, and easy to execute. Once again, call him today at 803-673-1851. The Mitchell House and Gardens is offering a holiday special. Between now and February 14th, you'll receive the lowest prices of the year for weddings and wedding receptions. With over 20 menus to choose from, we can cater your wedding to serve any budget. During this Valentine's Day special, all brides will receive a free bottle of champagne and a Red Roses bridal bouquet. We can serve parties from just your family to over 300. So if you're getting married and you haven't toured the Mitchell House, you owe it to yourself to do so. Give us a call for a free tour and consultation. Our number is 359-5325. The Mitchell House and Gardens, 421 North Lake Drive in Lexington. Call us now, 359-5325. We are back, and in studio with me is Jill Coverman. Jill is the curator of collections at the McKissick Museum at the end of the Horseshoe on USC's campus. It's the only free museum in Columbia with a lot of interesting exhibits, and one that we're going to speak of today is an exhibit that's gone on the latter part of 2008 and will go on for basically the next 3 months. It's called Natural Curiosity, right?
Well, Gary, let me correct you a little bit. The exhibit Natural Curiosity is one of our semi-permanent exhibits, so it'll be up for quite a while.
Oh, well, and the information I had said August the 9th through March the 25th.
Well, that's
not true. Well, you'll
not
have,
true.
We'll talk about that afterwards. Okay. But it is interesting in as much as it's an opportunity to kind of go around the world through interest in various minerals that are mined, like gold, for example, which a lot of people might not realize, but within a 50-mile radius of Columbia, there's gold being mined as we speak. Huh?
Right. We've got gold from the Hale Mine, from the mine just up the road, and from McCormick County mm-hmm. as well. We have some silver. We have some fantastic minerals that are from around the world. We have amethysts from South America. We have on display some animals, and both as this exhibit explores people's curiosity into the natural world, from the minerals that build up the world to the animals and plants that occupy the world and how people have collected them and used them for research. And so it's this at the core of this exhibit are some of the oldest collections from the university.
What I do think is interesting that many times what affects mineral distribution as well as mining of various minerals will deal with climate changes. I saw a report yesterday talking about that one of our nation's national parks is the park of natural glaciers that have existed in Montana for 7,000 years. Well, guess what? Newsflash is that the National Glacier Park is almost void of glaciers. They've melted. And it was very interesting to see pictures taken 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, a decade ago. And many of those glaciers that were here a decade ago ain't here no more. So once the snowball starts rolling downhill, to use that same analogy, mm-hmm. it melts pretty fast, huh?
Yeah.
And so, yes, it can be said that you can go from country and go around the world with different minerals. Climate changes do have an effect on that, and I assume that's all covered in the exhibit as well.
We don't go into a great deal about climate change, but one of the things that we look at with our mineral collections is we have examples of similar rocks from different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But then we focus in on particular types of animals that you might find only here in South Carolina, the moths that came through South Carolina. They were all collected and studied. Or looking at clay and how granite changes. You see similarities in South Carolina that you also might find over in France. And looking at barium that was found in South Carolina and it's associated going back to the gold and silver mines where this was very heavily, mind you, also see that in South America. And while I'm not a geologist, it's interesting to see how you have these deposits and where they're found. And that leads you into extra further exploration on why these changes occur and what was happening physically.
And just like I used the analogy of the glacier changes, mineral changes take place too. It just takes a lot longer. 7,000 years in terms of a glacier would be a pittance compared to many of these structural changes you talk about in clay and other rock structures that take tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years. And we give it our best guesstimate as to how old the specimen is. What is really interesting is, though, it's a ever-changing dynamic in as much as we don't know where all of the mineral locations are. We only know that when we discover a new one. And some of the artifacts, even here in South Carolina, were discovered by Dr. Goodyear less than 25 years ago on a tip from a rock collector who was not a geologist and by any means, just the guy that says, you know, I found a fossil here that looks kind of interesting.
Right. It's that curiosity that people have and the passing of information along. And that's the wonderful thing about the university community is there's so many different people with areas of expertise that they share. And that's what we have going on in our exhibit.
And I think what happens so oftentimes, Jill, is that people say, well, I know where McKissick is, but see, I'm not a student or on the faculty of the University of South Carolina. And since it's on Carolina's campus, I assume that that's for Carolina classes and for alumni and probably faculty, but not to the public. Well, no, that's not so. And as I said, yours is the only free museum, and Lord knows we have a lot of museums in Columbia, far more than probably most cities of our size in America have. I mean, we've got the State Museum.
Right.
We've got a local museum in the Columbia Museum. We have a living museum in Riverbanks Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
We have a children's museum in the Adventure, which is in front of the State Museum, and we got McKissick. So we have a lot of museums.
We do. And we would like people to come and visit us. We're open from 8:30 till 5, Monday through Friday, and on Saturdays from 11 o'clock until free. Please come and explore our exhibitions. We have one that looks at presidential politics. That'll be up for a few more weeks. And we have another one on the camp meeting tradition in North and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure as soon as you mention McKissick to a lot of people, they think, oh, my God. Where on earth would I park if I came to the museum?
There are a few spaces available along Pendleton Street, and there's a parking garage at the corner of Pendleton and Bull where people can park during the week.
And that's only a block and a half away, so it's not
right.
Like long distances to walk, especially if you walk through the administration little horseshoe there.
Right.
I mean, you're there in no time at all. And McKissick, I think, is, for many people, unfortunately, a well-kept secret, but it shouldn't be. And that's why I wanted to start the new year out with having you on to let people know the kind of exhibits that you can find at McKissick. And even though you indicated this is a fairly permanent, that doesn't mean that all the exhibits at your museum are permanent. You have a lot of changes during the year.
We do. Our exhibits change about every semester. So we'll have our spring art gala in the end of March,
mm-hmm.
and the gala event will be March 27th, and that exhibit will run through the first part of May. We'll have a couple exhibits over the summer, and then we'll have a couple new exhibits in the fall. And so things change a lot. We also change things up in the Natural Curiosity exhibit. We receive new specimens each year. We've got a fantastic barite specimen and some different amethysts that we're going to bringing out, some new shells, and we're going to be looking at how South Carolina is divided geologically. And there's so much to see in this exhibition. It's so hard to see it in just one visit. And we hope people will keep coming back and come back and see some of the great fossils that Thomas Cooper brought over in the 1820s.
Joe Coverman, I thank you so very much for coming and sharing on Health, Wealth, and Happiness.
Thank you so much, Gary.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you'll be back again tomorrow for more of Health, Wealth, and Happiness from 1 to 2. My first half hour's guest will be A.J. Lanigan. A.J. is a supplements manufacturer from Lexington, and we talk about health issues in the news. Hope to see you back here tomorrow. Have a good afternoon, everyone.